You're listening to Inside Israel Today with Gil Hoffman on the Land of Israel Network.
Hello and welcome to Inside Israel Today here on the Land of Israel Network on thelandofisrael.com on a hot and slimy day here in humid Jerusalem. I just arrived last night from Australia via Hong Kong. There seems to be a whole pattern of Land of Israel hosts being invited to Australia. Yishai Fleischer was received very well among the Aussies, and I encourage you to listen to his show all about that. This show will not be about that for the most part, because on my flight from Hong Kong, that's how you get to Australia, one of the best ways anyway, was my good old friend Saul Singer, the former op-ed writer, editorial writer for the Jerusalem Post. And then he made it big, as a lot of Jerusalem Post people do, writing a book called Startup Nation that I recommend for all of you. So in our second half of the show, we will be hearing about how Israel continues to be the startup nation. But before that, look, it's been a couple weeks since I missed my show last week, being on the way to Hong Kong and then Australia. So I can tell you, I went from Monday. I was the analyst of CNN as they were opening that embassy, finally, in Jerusalem. It was very special for me to be a part of that ceremony, even though I wasn't technically at it. I was at another place in Jerusalem overlooking the Old City and speaking on and off for more than an hour with Becky Anderson of CNN about the significance of the ceremony going on. And it really was a beautiful ceremony. I loved the speech of Jared Kushner. That was really hopeful and inspiring. I encourage you to find that on YouTube if you didn't get a chance to see it. I thought it was great to have pastors and rabbis speaking together at that same ceremony. I've never met Pastor Hagee. If anyone can get me ties with him, I would love him to come here on Inside Israel Today. But I have met Rabbi Wolowick, the rabbi of Chabad of the Five Towns in Long Island, and he's a really, really special man. And Netanyahu spoke well, and Trump spoke well, and I want to, for the umpteenth time, use this show to apologize for doubting Donald Trump, for not thinking that he would keep that promise to move the embassy, and he did. And as Carolyn Glick wrote 2 years ago now, and I'll never forget, she wrote, "There's no act that can make the world safer than America moving its embassy." And the reason why is because the world sees Israel as America's top ally. And when they see America treat its ally well, they say to themselves, we have an interest in being America's ally. And when countries are America's ally, that makes the world safer. That was the opposite of what was happening during the 8 years of the Obama administration. And now it is happening, and countries around the world realize that they have to be friends with Israel, that the path to Washington goes through Jerusalem. And so they have an interest, their country, their people, in having close ties to the Jewish state. And so when we look back, everyone is going to remember that special ceremony. And you know what? When we look back, the other events of the day aren't going to end up mattering in retrospect. The Hamas cynically tried to get attention by moving up by a day. They're rioting against Israel, their disgusting attempt to infiltrate with thousands of people into Israel, kidnap soldiers and threaten civilians. And it's a very, very big relief that it was stopped, that the IDF in that very, very difficult situation prevented there from being so much more loss of life, certainly a lot more civilian life. Imagine if you would have had 10 terrorists make their way successfully across the border and get into some vehicle that would bring them to a community where they would start opening fire. God forbid. You could have easily had hundreds of people be killed this week, Jews and Arabs. And I think the world has to be really appreciative of the IDF doing all it could to prevent the loss of civilian life, whether it was putting leaflets down from the air, telling people not to go there. It was interesting. Carolyn Glick wrote in her column on Friday that they should have scattered human and animal feces near the border so that no one would go there. And you know what? They didn't do that, but they did spray a terrible smell, and they did put gas there also to make it difficult to smell and to see when they were there. So they actually did what they could to prevent crowds from getting there, and maybe if they didn't do those things, it would have been worse. It's a tragedy for the people of Gaza. You know, we need to show empathy with them. They deserve better. Israel has done so much to help them. Israel initially let a lot of people from Gaza work in Israel. And then they built an industrial zone in the Erez Crossing so people could work there from Gaza. And the Hamas and others burned that down, and they kept on rebuilding and burning. And Israel built an airport for them in Dahania, in Gaza. That got destroyed. Look, Israel kept on helping them and helping them and helping them. I was there in Gaza when Israel withdrew every single Jew so they could run themselves there on their own without the IDF being in their way. And did they then use that opportunity to build up Gaza into the French Riviera? No, they unfortunately did not. They took the greenhouses that Israel left for them to employ them, and they destroyed them. And then they took their leadership. Mahmoud Abbas was their leader rightfully by law and sort of still is, even though they haven't had an election, and they overthrew him. I don't like the word coup. I like the word overthrow because it describes better what they did. They threw Abbas's people off the top of buildings to take over. And the Hamas has been in charge for a long time over there. And they have not been taking the massive amount of international aid that has flown into Gaza to build up Gaza, to build homes and schools and hospitals and playgrounds. No, they've been building terror tunnels and investing in terror to try to destroy our schools and hospitals and homes and playgrounds. It's so sad. The amount of cement that Israel has facilitated bringing into Gaza could have built towers all over Gaza, and nothing is being built above ground. They're futilely building tunnels that will soon be meaningless as the underground barrier that Israel has built nears completion. And so the people of Gaza deserve so much better than what they have right now. But one small credit to Hamas is at least they're not firing rockets. They have not fired rockets since the last operation of Israel into Gaza. All the rockets that have been fired by rebel groups in order to hurt Hamas. Now, in this weekend's Jerusalem Post, my former executive editor, Amos Asael, had an interesting suggestion. He called upon Sisi from Egypt to really invest in Gaza in a serious kind of way, and people around the world to help those investments. Build resorts in the Sinai, in the area that touches the Mediterranean Sea, that could employ the people of Gaza over there. Build farms and factories around those resorts that will give further employment. And build a port that will be on both sides of the border between Egypt and to Gaza. Sounds like a great idea. And I hope the world read that column. And we'll talk to Sisi about how to implement such a great idea. Now, I mean, that certainly would help the people of Gaza a lot more than sending children to go near a fence and try to infiltrate Israel. That's certainly not going to help their lives in any way. Another person I am really relieved for, who it could have been so much worse with, is Netta.
Israel have won.
Israel! With 317 points, Israel wins with 529.
Netta from Israel. She was the early favorite.
I was so relieved for Netta. Netta Barzilai, the winner of the Eurovision Song Contest, the proud Israeli, that what happened in Gaza did not happen the day before the Eurovision Song Contest. Because had that happened, I don't think she would have received the outpouring of support that she received from countries around the world, including countries not known for being the most pro-Israel people in the world. After all, she received the maximum number of points from France. And so it could have been worse. And I'm so happy for Netta that she won. I'm not a big fan of the song in particular, but she is a down-to-earth, really good person who deserves the best. And Netta reminds me of another person who I think is the ultimate contrast with her. Natalie Portman's real name, having been born in Jerusalem, we're not allowed to say the words Natalie Portman here on the Land of Israel Network? What if I'm being critical? Is that okay? So Natalie Portman's real given name here in Jerusalem was Netta Lee Hirschlag. And so her decision to not come here, not even to take advantage of Israeli democracy and speak her mind if she has a problem with the policies of Netanyahu or with Netanyahu personally, really was such a downer for the people of Israel, especially those who admired her and respected her and appreciated her past efforts of Israel advocacy. And there was no bigger pick-me-up after being harmed so much by one Netta than the victory of the other Netta. And so, when it comes to looks, obviously Natalie Portman has an advantage over Netta Barzilai. But when it comes to everything else, when it comes to character, when it comes to pride, when it comes to just being a nice person, I will pick Netta Barzilai over Netta Lee Hirschlag Portman. Any day. What I'd like to end this half of the show with is just by thanking the people of Australia for receiving me so warmly, both in Sydney, where I spoke at an extremely successful Chabad dinner for the Chabad of the North Shore and Rabbi Nachum Shapiro, and in Melbourne, where I had the honor and pleasure of speaking at a place called Dominion. Dominyan, Dominion, a crowd of hundreds and hundreds of mostly young people on Shavuot night. Also spoke at the Chabad of Glen Ira. Also spoke at HaMerkaz Shelanu with a lot of Israeli people there in the crowd. Also spoke to nice high school girls. Also spoke at Shul. Also spoke at some wonderful meals where I was hosted by some great people. I saw no kangaroo. I saw no koala. Some pretty weird-looking birds like magpies, but that's about it. No other animal. But I saw some wonderful, wonderful Jews who care a tremendous amount about the Jewish state, who are so far away, and yet you could tell that Israel is so close to their hearts. So, and they loved Yishai Fleischer. And I encourage more hosts here at the Land of Israel Network to make that trek to beautiful Australia. After the break, we'll be speaking here to Saul Singer, author of Startup Nation, here on the Land of Israel Network on thelandofisrael.com. Don't touch that dial.
Awake, Tribe of Judah, calls Zev Jabotinsky. Nature beckons with the spring. Passover beckons, the day of Exodus, liberation from our chains. Well, I'm definitely looking for a little bit of liberation. And frankly, even a healthy dose of redemption. Because I'm Rav Mike Foyer, and this is The Jewish Story.
Join Rav Mike Foyer for the best Jewish history podcast, The Jewish Story, on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.
And we're back here on Inside Israel Today on the Land of Israel Network on thelandofisrael.com, where I'm so excited to have on our show today Saul Singer, the author of the acclaimed book Startup Nation, which has been translated into more than 30 languages around the world. Saul is a former writer of editorials at the Jerusalem Post, and then he moved up in the world, probably works a little better hours now, maybe makes a little more money, and makes Israel look good all around the world, telling people about the wonders of Israel and how and why it is leading the world in high tech. Saul, thank you for being here on Inside Israel Today on thelandofisrael.com.
Happy to be here, Gil.
Okay, so we saw each other there in the airport in Hong Kong when I was on the way back from Australia, and you were on the way back from a city in China whose name I don't remember. Please enlighten the people. What city was it and why were you there?
It was Chengdu, a small city in China, probably bigger than Israel. Lots of cities like that in China you haven't heard of that are bigger than Israel. I was there to speak at a conference, actually a conference about a startup competition with Israeli and Chinese startups.
That's really cool. Did we win?
I don't remember whether the winner was an Israeli startup or a Chinese startup. I think it was an Israeli startup, actually.
That's really great. So why do they care so much in China about learning from Israel about how to be a startup nation? And why is your book so successful there in China that you keep on? You mentioned you've been invited to China 5 times?
10 times. This was my 10th
wow.
trip. What's happened with China and many other countries is that around the world, as the world changes faster and faster, the change and accelerating in the world, countries are sort of panicking and saying, well, we need to be more innovative to stay on top of this. And they say to themselves, okay, you know, we would like to be like Silicon Valley. That's what we want. And they look at the United States and they see, well, we're not the U.S. We can't do that. So then they hear about Israel, this tiny place with no resources in a bad neighborhood. And they see, well, Israel did it. And they think, okay, well, maybe we can do it. And they want to find out how Israel did it. And there's a lot of admiration in many countries, and it seems to be particularly strong in China, where they are particularly motivated to become innovative because they believe that that's really what's separating them from being the leading country in the world. They see they are the largest country by far in population. They are about the same GDP as the United States and probably going to pass the United States. But they feel that they are not leading the world the way the United States is. And a big reason for that is innovation. So they really want to become more innovative.
So after your book was so successful, you started something called Startup Nation Central. Please tell us what that is.
So Startup Nation Central is a nonprofit organization that tries to connect Israel, particularly the high-tech sector, with the rest of the world, and basically tries to serve the tremendous interest in Israel. The delegations coming all the time from different governments and companies and business leaders and so on, coming to Israel to see Startup Nation, to see what's going on here and try to figure it out. And so Startup Nation Central was kind of created to just tell that story. And in particular, they built a great database that has all 6,000 Israeli startups, hundreds of corporate development centers, venture funds, accelerators. The whole system is there on the database. You can, it's called the Finder, and you can look by technology or company or whatever you're looking for and find it there.
And where can you find that online, or do you have to pay for that?
No, it's free. It's just go to startupnationcentral.org. It's kind of a long address, but startupnationcentral.org. And or just look for Startup Nation Finder on Google, and it'll pop up.
So give us an example of a current Israeli startup that, that can inspire people around the world.
So, I mean, there's so many. I keep running into lots of interesting ones, and in, I'm particularly interested in the medical or health place, and one I think could really make a huge difference is a company called Beyond Verbal, which was at first studying how to detect emotion from voice. You know, instead of trying to understand the words in a voice, trying to understand the emotion. And they built that, and they're excited about that. But then they realized that they could actually diagnose disease through voice.
Wow.
Including something like cardiac disease, which is an even bigger problem than cancer. And it turns out you can diagnose cardiac disease, cardiovascular disease, just by analyzing a minute or so of voice. So, you know, there's another one I saw just in China, again in the medical area, that has come up with a wrist, something like you wear like a watch, and it can measure your blood pressure continuously. Blood pressure is one of the hardest things to measure and the most important things to measure because, again, one of the most deadly things is high blood pressure. Until now, nobody's been able to figure out how do you measure that without putting a cuff on and going to the doctor or buying one and doing it home. So this, they've figured out how to do it optically from your wrist. And do it continuously. I mean, it just goes it goes on and on.
That's really, really cool. I know that we're getting oxygen out of water, and we're putting snow on the Alps, and all kinds of exciting, inspiring companies all around the world. Now, the naysayers, though, say that Israel isn't very good at building a bigger company, that whenever startups start doing well, they go in and sell themselves off to Google and to Facebook, and because of that, we haven't been able to build a mega company in Israel. Is that true, and is that a problem?
There's something ironic that I find as I travel around the world, and that is that everywhere I go, people are blind to their own strengths. They're very aware of what's difficult for them. And they take for granted what they're good at. So Israelis say, you know, why do we only do startups? Why can't we do big companies? And then everywhere else I go, everyone says, why can't we do startups? And they just take for granted that they can do big companies. So the fact that we keep complaining about only so-called doing startups shows that we don't really appreciate how difficult and how important that is in the world economy and how so many other countries are... We're just dying to have as many startups as we do, and here we are complaining, why can't we do big companies? But yes, it's true that we're not very good at building big companies, though we're getting, you know, the companies we're building are getting bigger.
Yeah, is there a company that could crack that threshold? People talk about Wix, maybe, I don't know.
Well, see, this is the other thing, is that This is not just an Israeli issue. It's basically, even in Silicon Valley, it's almost impossible for a new company to get into the category of Google, Facebook, Apple, because those enormous companies will buy you. You know, Facebook paid $19 billion for WhatsApp. So who can turn down that kind of money? At some point, there's no price that they won't pay if they want it, or they want to block you or whatever. They'll do whatever it takes. So in a way, Silicon Valley companies are now in the same boat. They are building companies to sell to these larger companies. They've become Israelified, I guess you could say. But I don't see anything wrong with that. I think there are two stages or two kinds of business these days. There's startups and there's big companies. And startups are great at innovation, and they're not very good at scaling, at growing. Big companies are great at scaling and growing, but they're not. It's not so easy for them to innovate. So what you have here in Israel, and a big part of what we call Startup Nation, is this synergy between what corporates are good at and what startups are good at. And that's why you have these hundreds of huge companies here. They're not here for the Israeli market. There is no Israeli market. They're here to innovate. That's the only reason they're here. And the way they innovate is they partner with startups. They buy them or they build their own development center. Often, like IBM has bought more than 10 startups here. Those 10 startups are the IBM development center here in Israel, all those people. So that's how it works.
My last question is there a hopeful message you can give our listeners around the world who include many lovers of Israel, both Jews and Christians, who want Israel to have an even better future?
So I really think it's important for people to understand and appreciate how innovative Israel is, how strong this high-tech sector is, how important it is to the world, how admired it is around the world, and how so many countries and people, everywhere I go, they want to connect with Israel when it comes to innovation. It's really quite amazing. Some of the same countries that are kind of hostile with Israel when it comes to the conflict can't get enough of Israel when it comes to innovation. So I think this is a very exciting and optimistic world where many, many countries want to work with Israel, and it's a positive story, and it's Israel making a difference in the world. So I think it's important for people to be aware of this side of the story and not just the stuff you see in the headlines.
Beautiful. Saul, thank you for coming here on Inside Israel today on the Land of Israel Network, on thelandofisrael.com, and I especially appreciate you coming on after a very long flight from Hong Kong after a flight from China.
My pleasure.
And listeners, thank you for being with us on another exciting edition here of Inside Israel Today. Have a great day from here in Jerusalem. Bye-bye.
In an unprecedented revelation that shocked the world, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu exposed Iran's diabolical plan to build nuclear weapons and ultimately thrust the world into nuclear war. How did Israel successfully penetrate the most protective and secretive bunker in Tehran and extract thousands of files from under the Iranian regime? And the one question nobody seems to be asking is, why does Iran want to destroy Israel in the first place? This week on Israel Inspired.
Israel Inspired with Ari Abramowitz and Jeremy Gimpel on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. Sharing the truth and beauty of Israel with the world.